Welcome to Northern Soundings Alaskan Conversation. I'm your host, Robert Hannon. We live in tumultuous times. Headlines about climate change and political turmoil greet us every day. On this show, we'll hear from two women who are responding creatively to dire news.
I think we're inundated with images in the media that have to do with fires in Sonoma and melting permafrost. And it actually doesn't work. We don't see it anymore because we're numb to those images.
Multimedia artist Brenda Zlamani discusses the portraits and stories of those grappling with climate change. And Elizabeth Alexander is a political geographer whose research led her to podcast about the effort to recall Governor Dunleavy.
People are being hurt. The stories from the Pioneers home, from daycare, from the arts. And so what I wanted to do with the podcast is let people actually hear the voices of people who either support the recall or themselves have been impacted by the governor's actions.
I hope you'll stick around. As many Alaskans know, there is a drive to recall Governor Mike Dunleavy. The effort was a response to the governor's actions, including his budget, which deeply slashed programs including the Marine Highway System, education, and senior benefits. The first phase of the recall effort this summer gathered an overwhelming number of signatures. But the effort is now in the courts when the Division of Elections rejected the recall application on the opinion of Attorney General Kevin Clarkson. Clarkson says the application's grounds were legally insufficient. Recall supporters are seeking that decision to be overturned. But not all responses to the recall effort are legal at this point. Elizabeth Alexander has a doctorate in political geography. As you'll hear, she felt it was critical to hear from Alaskans impacted by the governor's actions. She decided to protest through podcasting. Here's an excerpt of her inaugural episode.
Recently, I spoke with three Fairbanksans to get their thoughts on the recall.
I'm Mike West. I live in Fairbanks, family here in town with three school-age kids. I work at the university in earthquake science.
My name is Lucy Evans, and I am from Colombia. I moved to Alaska in 1977. I came here looking for work, and also because I heard that Alaska was very beautiful. My heart is divided. One part is for me to take care of my business and my clients as a hairdresser, and the other part, which I live at night, is to become a writer full-time one day.
I'm the Reverend Leslie Ahuva Fales, and I'm the minister of the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Fairbanks. And I serve a congregation of about 108 people here in the Golden Heart City.
Like everyone I've talked to about the recall, they each have their own reasons, but they're very united on one theme. The governor's behavior and his actions are not what Alaska is all about.
To be an Alaskan for me is to be here to take care of ourselves, first of all, because the weather is pretty brutal, so the community has to be pretty close together. We're like a big family, and then have the opportunity to make this beautiful place no more beautiful, because it's already beautiful, but to preserve what we have, because we live in a paradise, really.
What about the state differentiates it from anywhere else that I've ever lived is how people here take care of one another. That is like part of the core ethos of what it means to be an Alaskan. And it's something that nobody tells you. You know, it's something that you feel as soon as you start to integrate into this community, that people will bring you food when you're sick, or they will help you when you're trying to find a place to live, or you know, the way that people potluck to support one another when there's a need or an illness or a death. You know, someone's roof is caving in on their, you know, very Alaskan home that they have, and people are just going to go out there and help replace his roof. It's a beautiful thing that people just naturally do here. Doesn't matter what political stickers are on your car. You know, at 30 below, we're all family.
Living in Alaska has been everything that I anticipated and more. It's been a spectacular place to raise a family. My kids are tough and capable, all sorts of things that they don't even really know, because they don't have any other perspective. That's just how they are. I don't take all the credit for that. I really honestly believe that the community here and the lifestyle has just had a profound influence on them and our family.
Each of us has our own reasons for signing the recall. I wondered what theirs are.
I did sign the recall, and the reason for that is not so much that I disagree with a decision or two from what I see out of our administration, but the way that it's being conducted does not agree with my view of what executive branch leadership should look like. When a senior administrator goes before the legislature and states that we're proposing the following action, and no, we have not examined the consequences, it just has to happen, that's not acceptable to me.
I sign it because I always believe that bad things happen fast, and good things, to create good things, it takes time. And I believe that a leader did things too fast, and I wanted a leader who makes a decision based on work that he did personally to understand what is going on. We don't make changes based on a moment without thinking about it. I understand that sometimes we need to cut things, you know, because maybe things are not as organized as they can be. But I do believe that you don't go there and cut so much in one time, you know, it's like cutting half of the body. This is a metaphor, but cutting like somebody's body in half, and then you're only gonna leave part of the body try to function. It doesn't work that way, you know, we have to do things systematically.
I have signed the recall petition. I was there the day that it started at Pioneer Park, and I got there about 20 minutes after they started, and I was just overjoyed to see all the people there, people that I didn't recognize. I waited for about 5 minutes because it was a very well-oiled machine. I actually didn't even have to get to the front of the line. Somebody came with a petition halfway through the line and was like walking with people and like helping them get through. So another one of our principles is Unitarians is belief and participation in the democratic process. I will never tell my people whom to vote for or not to vote for. That is not an ethical thing for me to do. But when someone is using their power at the highest levels to wreak suffering and death, and this will cause the deaths of some people, I have no choice but to stand up and say that we will use every tool within the arsenal of our body politic, which in this case is participating in the recall effort.
You just heard an excerpt of a fledgling podcast targeting the recall effort of Governor Mike Dunleavy. The creator and producer, Elizabeth Alexander, says beyond the legal, economic, and political issues involved, people's lives are at stake.
I chose to do a podcast because I think it's voices that is most important in this recall, particularly in these periods when the activity of gathering signatures and you know, going through the longer process is it may feel like a lull out there, but actually it's not, because while all that work is going on, people are being hurt. The stories from the Pioneers home, from daycare, from the arts, even those institutions who did get funding in the end, brought back to some degree, are in a pretty high degree of trouble. And so what I wanted to do with the podcast is let people actually hear the voices of people who either support the recall or themselves have been impacted by the governor's actions.
Now, had you ever done anything with podcasting before this?
Not with podcasting per se, but as part of my graduate work, I did do recording both video and audio. I did a master's degree in geopolitics and security as a lead up to my PhD work. And as part of that, I researched the Scottish referendum, the independence referendum. And I spent about 2 months up in Scotland interviewing people, both in formal ways and informal ways, in coffee shops, but also pre-arranged gatherings. And those I often recorded or videotaped for future use in my analysis. So they weren't publicly presented as a final product, but they were absolutely integral to what I was doing. So I had some familiarity with the equipment, and also how powerful it is to actually hear people's voices as opposed to a written word, for example.
Now, it's interesting. You went in to secure your doctorate in political geography, but you worked for the software industry before that. Why did you leave that, and what drew you to that?
So software was an absolutely exciting place to be, but after 15 years in that industry, I realized that I didn't feel, for me, that I was producing anything of lasting benefit. It's such a high turnover kind of industry. I was a product manager, so I defined what kind of software we needed to build, and then I would test it and make sure that it was working for customers or our partner channel. But the turnover is so fast that a lot of times the work you do just kind of disappears very quickly into the ether. You know the rate of change in software. We've all experienced it. I wanted to do something that made more of a contribution, and I also really wanted to take time to think through and understand the problems that I saw as really pressing. The things that matter in the world, I didn't feel like I was having an understanding, much less an impact on any of those. So it was time for me to go and do what was really an unrealized dream.
Certain observers of the software industry and of the internet, et cetera, have long been concerned about the issue of privacy and its impact. But it seems, strikes me, Elizabeth, that lately that role in the whole political discourse and life of a country or indeed around the world is really in sharp focus today.
It is. There's a lot of work being done around this idea of the echo chamber, and that's that you can, because of your pre-existing beliefs and understandings of the world, you connect through social media and through the different sites on the internet to people who believe what you already believe. And through that system, your existing belief system is augmented and cemented in such a way as to contribute to the polarization of our society, not just ours, but you can see it happening across the world as well.
Now, your time to study political geography is a heady time because not only the Scottish referendum, but there was the whole issue of Brexit that I'm sure that you watched and thought about a great deal. Would that be right?
That would be right. And in fact, there's a tie right back to the recall because essentially the recall is a referendum. It's a referendum on the current governor of Alaska. The referendum in Scotland was a referendum on whether to stay or leave the EU. And in many ways, it was fought on the basis of stability. People who said, let's remain in the UK were like, this is better, we're part of the EU. The EU doesn't promise that we get to stay if we leave the United Kingdom. So, you know, the best course of action, the safest thing to do is to stay in the Union. And guess what? Turns out it wasn't so much. And Brexit was another referendum. And the problem with referendums is a yes, no on very complicated issues. And again, back to the podcast, because it may seem a simple issue to say yes or no to the governor, but it isn't actually. There's a lot of different elements to that discussion and, of course, a lot of different points of view. So understanding what the impact is and why it's important to recall is an element of a referendum. So, yeah, Brexit, it's a really sad time, actually, for people in the UK. It's divided families, it's divided communities, it's divided different aspects of the country. And some of the research done recently on Brexit is really fascinating because the assumption was because, for example, Wales voted, it looked like overwhelmingly, to leave the EU, that the Welsh were opposed to the EU, but it turns out it was English settlers, retirees in the borderlands of Wales who tipped that vote to leave.
Well, and that's ironic in a sense because oftentimes these movements, for example, Brexit and certain other nationalistic movements, are really identified of us against them. And we have to pull in the wagons and sort of circle things around and just protect our piece of turf.
There's this term called othering. So it's the actual conscious, deliberate attempt to set up a situation in which people are seeing themselves as in opposition to others or other people as some kind of threat. And that's very much part of what the world's facing.
The historian Yuval Noah Harari wrote a book called Sapiens, and his contention was we have developed so much as a species that problems that previously, political and economic and environmental problems that originally could be solved on the local or national level are now beyond that, and that we really do have to in some way encompass cooperative behavior on the political scale if we're going to meaningfully address that. What's your perspective, having studied this and got your doctorate in it?
It's very hard to disagree with him, and I think he's not wrong. He ties into something. He's a historian, I'm a geographer, but scale is something that we hold in common, and that idea of where things can be solved. I guess I differ a little bit with him in that I think the solutions have to come at both micro and macro scales. Because if we're talking about, for example, democracy as a way of solving governance, it seems to me that it works best at smaller scales, and I tend to use Iceland as an example. It's not perfect as a country by any means, but if you look at its reaction to the financial crisis, to the privatization of banks that then failed, and the public, the civic response to a demand to pay back through taxation to all of the investors who invested, basically Icelanders said no and fired the government and hired a new one. And I thought they could do that essentially because of the size of the country, which isn't too far in terms of population from the state of Alaska.
And we often kind of want to geopolitically link ourselves with the polar nations. And indeed, because of climate change, many of the impacts of climate changing are felt disproportionately strongly in the high latitudes.
That's right. And I think we're linked in so many different ways. There's certainly some economic links. There's a clear, as you say, a geographical link. And I think there's a cultural link. I got to meet some people and get to know them quite well through my earlier work in software in Iceland. And we clicked immediately, and we sort of decided that's because we're both essentially northern peoples. And, you know, people from the north have an attitude towards one another that has to do with stopping and helping if somebody is stuck on the side of the road because you're either remote or it's cold outside, but basically you're part of a community.
So I'm wondering, what can the average person do? Obviously, you're trained now to analyze and think about these issues. Mm-hmm. Are there things that you would tell the listener to start thinking and contributing in creative ways to resolving the problems and the polarization? And can you do that in 30 seconds there?
That's a pretty big question. But what I think everybody can do is question their own assumptions, do a bit of research, come to a conclusion and share that conclusion with other people. You don't have to be a PhD, you don't have to be a master's student to do that. You just need to take a little bit of time and try to understand the facts for yourself. Kind of back to that discussion we had about the bubble. You know, can you separate yourself from the bubble a little bit? Because we all come with a bias. We all have what my field calls positionality. I am who I am. I am, you know, a white woman born in Alaska of a certain age, a university brat. That's part of who I am, and I can't not be that, but I can recognize that that's where I come from when I think about things. So sort of trying as much as you can to step outside of where you are and question your assumptions and do some research and think things through for yourself. I have a lot of respect for people like Dermot Cole. I read what he writes with a certain seriousness, but I also check out his facts and think about other arguments about how his argument may or may not be true or may not hold water for me personally. But then I think you've got to take that thinking and outside yourself and share it with other people.
I recently had the opportunity to talk with Catherine Hayhoe, who is a climate scientist. She's also an evangelical Christian. And one of her recommendations, the three top things to engage in to make a difference, was a talk about it, which your podcast is addressing. Secondly, is join groups that amplify your voice and vote was the third thing. You kind of agree with those points?
Yeah, I do. The sharing, amplify your voice, there's different modes of doing that. For example, when a certain person was elected president and I wasn't so happy about that, my first reaction was to up my donations. So I'd already joined, I already was a member of many of those groups, but I sat back and I looked and I did my research to figure out who had a crackerjack legal team, because it seemed obvious that a lot of the fights ahead were going to be fought in the courts, in the judicial system, and I gave my money to those who already knew how to fight that kind of fight. So I think there are different ways of joining.
What's ahead for Elizabeth now with the podcast? Obviously, you were talking about there's a gap between each of the mileposts that go forward, mm-hmm. and right now I'm guessing it's going to be a legal wrangle.
It would be very nice if the lieutenant governor would accept the proposition, but
we think he probably won't, and there will be a legal fight. So yeah, that will take some time. That kind of goes back to keeping the momentum going and just reminding people this is not over. And not only that, he walked back some of his budget cuts, but were he to survive the recall, he'd be pretty much free to do anything, wouldn't he? So I think we have to keep the danger top of mind. Mm-hmm. So I have other things going on in my life. I did before this started, and I will continue to do so. I'm writing a book based on my PhD. I'm writing some articles. I've become very interested in the relationship between geography and science. So I've got some projects that I'm working on.
Elizabeth Alexander, I can't thank you enough for sitting down and talking with me.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Links to Elizabeth Alexander and her podcast are on the Northern Soundings website. She'll also be talking about the podcast at the monthly Fahrenkamp luncheon in Fairbanks this December. That's it for this edition of Northern Soundings. I hope you'll join me next time as I explore the genetics of the Ice Age. See you then.